Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. So there's money and there's sex. And here's what these two subjects have in common. Parents often find them difficult to talk about with their kids. We're going to focus on money now, why parents should talk to their kids about it, even their very, very young kids. So says Ron Lieber. He's the personal finance columnist for the New York Times and author of the new book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. He also wrote a recent piece for the New York Times, which was extracted from that book, entitled Why You Should Tell Your Children How Much You Make. You can find a link to that at radioboston.org. And Ron Lieber joins us now from New York. Ron, good to have you. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
And listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. How do you handle money conversations with your kids? Do you talk about it at all? Do you find it difficult? Do you tell them how much you make? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So I'd love to start, Ron, by just asking you this, that one of the big sort of underlying premises of your book is that parents have a difficult time having this conversation with their kids. Why is that?
I think there are all sorts of reasons for this kind of epidemic of silence around money and families. And when I describe this, I always try to remind people that what we're talking about here usually is families who have at least a little bit more than average, a little bit more than the median. You know, if you have less than that, chances are the money conversations are a day-to-day reality, and it's a very difficult and different conversation that you're going to have with your kids. But if you're lucky enough to have a little bit more, maybe you're ashamed still about the way that you spend money. Maybe you spend too much. Maybe you're in debt. Or maybe you think it's impolite. Or maybe you think it's not age appropriate. Or you're trying to protect your kids from this adult stuff because you think it may worry them.
Yeah. So let's jump right into this provocative idea, why you should tell your children how much you make. There are lots of reasons parents don't, but tell me why you think they should.
I think by the time a child is ready, and this is after a decade of a long process where you get them ready, but by the time they are ready, maybe at 15, 16, 17, I think at that point they ought to know how it is that you provide whatever life you provide for them. How much does it cost? What would it take for them to? They are getting ready to make a six-figure decision in most cases if you're not qualifying for much financial aid. About college, and they're thinking about what it is they want to do for a living, they should know what it takes to have the life that they have now. And I see no downside to telling them that.
You know, you have a great example of a guy named Scott Parker who wanted to teach his six kids about the value of money. And I love the way he did it. Can you describe what he did?
Sure. So Mr. Parker was upset that nobody had ever told him what it was going to take to raise a family. And he didn't feel like he was particularly well brought up in this regard or well educated. And so he just decided one day, without really asking anybody's permission or warning anybody that this is going to happen, he just went to the Wells Fargo branch one day and he asked for all of his salary, $10,000 or so of it, in cash. And not just in cash, but in singles. And he grabbed these piles of singles and he put them in the unmarked canvas bag as if he was robbing a bank. And off he went into his car. He marches into the house. The kids sit down. He dumps the whole bag of money onto the table. And then he starts peeling it off. And there's the pile for the tithe to the church. And there's the pile for the mortgage. And there's the pile for Cub Scouts. And the pile for pizza night. And the pile for the electric bill. And pretty soon, after six kids and two grown-ups and all their needs, there isn't a whole lot of money left. And the kids were sort of googly-eyed. They could not believe it. They'd never seen this much money. And all of a sudden, in one very visceral moment, they knew a lot more about how the world works.
Mm. Now, you make a case for starting these conversations very young. And so let me just throw you, and I know you're not necessarily saying tell your three-year-old exactly how much you make, but you do make the case that start these conversations at a young age. So I want to give you my concern about telling kids about money. And this may be, on my part, a result of a certain kind of social conditioning. But But I sort of grew up with this idea that kids have this binary view of the world, white and black, good and bad. And so when my kid was little, the question was always, you know, are we rich or are we poor? And I always felt it was important to sort of avoid that question and try to communicate, we're fine, we're fortunate, we're well off, we're in good shape. But giving a kid a random number doesn't necessarily communicate that.
Mm-hmm. And I would be hesitant to give kids who are younger very many random numbers, because even if they do have the math skills to sort of compute it, they probably don't have the context. And so a better response for a question like that for a child who is under the age of 10 or really for any question that comes up, but particularly the rich and poor ones, is, oh, why do you ask? Mm. And it's not, why do you ask? You're trying to convey a sense of appreciation that the child is curious enough to ask, that they're not afraid to ask a difficult question, and that they trust that you will give them an honest answer. It's also a stalling tactic, right? Because if it's a really tough question, you want to give yourself some time to think about exactly how you're going to answer it. But, you know, it often turns out that they're not even, you know, really thinking that you're rich or thinking that you're poor. They're asking because they overheard you having a money fight with a spouse or having an argument with a creditor or someone trying to bill you over the phone, or they read something scary in the newspaper. And that's what they're really asking about. And especially with the little ones, you can often divert them to a very difficult or to a very different conversation that will satisfy them without actually having to answer the original question that they asked.
You write that money is a source of mystery to children. I'm curious, what was your experience of money as a kid, which I have to assume sort of informs some of the background of why you wrote this book?
Sure. I mean, I think the experience that moved me most deeply and has stuck with me was when I experienced a change in social class status when I was a child. Mm. In middle school, my parents got divorced. You know, this is always a difficult situation financially because you're taking one household and turning it into two. And you're hoping along the way that those two households, each one individually, won't be that much of a downgrade from the one that you had before. But right around that same time, my dad lost his job, and it took the family a while to get back to where it had been financially. And so my siblings and I went on financial aid at the school where we were attending. And all throughout college, every year, my mom and I would march into the financial aid office and basically beg for more money. You know, and negotiation is another way to talk about it, right? But we really needed it. It was going to be hard for us to pull it off if the financial aid office didn't come through. And they did. But, you know, that was a sort of a consciousness-raising experience for me. And it also gave me the sense that, you know what, you can negotiate, you can go in, you can learn how the system works, and you can find legal ways to beat it. And that's sort of what led me to personal finance.
Sure. Ron Lieber, stand by. We're talking to Ron Lieber. He's a personal finance columnist for the New York Times, author of the new book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. And Ron, stand by. I want to introduce John Spooner. He's an investment advisor and author of many books, including No One Ever Told Us That, Money and Life Letters to My Grandchildren. And John Spooner, good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Nice to be here, Anthony. Thanks.
And I want to disclose that you are a member of the WBUR board. But I'd love to get your take on this. Since you wrote a book about advice to a younger generation, you manage money. What's your view on what parents should do? Do you agree with Ron Lieber's point of view of disclose, talk, have this conversation as soon as possible?
Well, when it comes to money, like relationships, there are a million ways to the truth, at least. So I believe in teach about money, but not your money. So that
teach about money, but not your money.
But not your own money, right. That this should be not thrown out to particularly teenage kids. Because these days, maybe it gives one of two messages. One is, if you're really well off, it gives one more excuse for the next generation to coast on what your parents have. I mean, we're looking at the first generation, younger generation in American history that will not exceed their parents. And I have something like, well, several thousand clients all over the globe, and they report in to me weekly, if not daily, from various corners. And almost all of them are writing checks, grandparents and parents, to the next generation. and the neediness of the next generation is really hurting moms and dads all across the country, and grandparents too.
Interesting.
So I think early on, as far as education is concerned, when I say teach them about money, one thing that I would emphasize in any household, it would be good if these kids got out and had part-time jobs.
Right.
I caddied for years when I was 11 or 12. And at Christmas time, high school buddies and I would work at department stores wrapping packages, and when the holiday rush was on.
Yeah, jobs are important. And Ron Lieber, you actually write about the importance of that. But respond to John Spooner's point about maybe it's better in certain situations not to talk about your own money with your kids.
Well, I think the only way that kids come to the conclusion that they are going to be able to coast is if the grown-ups in their life give them that impression. So even if you have a fair bit of family money, you can have a very clear and honest conversation with a child that, hey, look, you know, not only are you going to have to work for a semester's worth of tuition, but this money that the family has, it is not going to be coming to you at the age of 22 when you finish college, and it is not going to be coming to you when you get married, whenever you get married, and we will not be paying for graduate school for you if that happens to be the case. So, if you give kids a very clear impression about what belongs to who and what the set of expectations are, then I don't think there's any possibility that they're going to coast if it's clear that you are not going to bail them out.
Hmm. What do you think, John?
Well, I find that most households are not consistent in how they raise children, and that many households are run for the children, not for the adults. So I take kind of a different view. But in terms of education, one thing I'd start to teach kids is looking at the world in different ways. And I believe in asking the unusual questions. And one thing that I insist on, and leads to money eventually, is that most young people are not told about stories of the past and where their families came from and who are they and how did they get to this place. So that I delved into wherever I could find out about grandparents and immigrant grandparents in my life, very influential. And I was lucky enough, or by accident, to ask one particular grandfather who was an immigrant from Poland and settled in the West End of Boston. And he and all of his friends wanted to be American as fast as possible. And he found a way through sports to do that. And he sang opera. Hmm. And he told me about the past and that every one of he and his friends worked from the time they were 8 or 9 years old and never stopped, actually, worked their whole lives. And it kind of ingrained lots of things in me, that if you want something badly enough, you're going to have to work for it.
Sure.
And then telling my children and grandchildren, too, tales from the past. And then I lead them to, okay, someday I hope you're going to be making money. And someday you're going to have money in the stock market that hopefully will grow. And this is the old Peter Lynch theory, eyes and ears. And what kinds of things? Tell me, kids, everything that you use, whether it's a toy, whether it's a piece of sports equipment, whether it's your toothpaste, they're all manufactured by companies that all try and make profits. And chances are all of these companies are public. And I'd like three companies from you, my children and grandchildren. What would you invest in that you think is going to be doing well in the future?
All right, so that gets them involved.
Capitalism.
Right, that gets them involved in that conversation.
Yeah.
John and Ron Lieber, stand by. I want to get a couple of calls into this conversation. Some good questions from listeners here. Beth is calling from Sharon. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi. I don't actually have a question. I just wanted to share a finance story that we started basically with our kids. When our kids were very little, we decided to put them on a base allowance. And it was a discussion that we had with our kids when they were very young, maybe about 5 and 7. And we asked them to give us a base number. And then we asked, basically, it was a participatory exercise. Okay, what other things can you do to raise the base? What other things can you do around the house to help? We had them put a valuation on it. And then we put up a chart in which they had to self-report every day. They had to select which chores they did. At the end of the week, they then had to tally up whatever chores they did dollar-wise, and then come to us and tell us how much we owed them. And one Sunday in particular struck us as being particularly poignant was when my little daughter went back to the chart and deselected a chore because she came to the table and we asked her why she deselected, and she said, "I don't think I did a very good job, so I don't think I should be paid."
Great story, Beth. Ron Lieber, I'd love to come to you on Beth's story because you actually write about the importance of allowances.
Yeah, I think allowance is a tool for learning. Money itself is a teaching tool, the same way that a paintbrush or other art supplies are, a book, a piece of sports equipment, or a musical instrument. I think money is for practice, and I encourage parents to decouple the allowance from the completion of chores. I think chores are something that everybody should do in the household, no matter how old they are, and they should not expect compensation for it. And parents often ask me, well, what leverage do I have over my child then? And to me, it's pretty simple. You know, you take away valued privileges if they don't do the chores well. So goodbye screen time, goodbye cell phone, goodbye soccer practice, and, you know, goodbye anything else that may be important to you that you actually like to do. And that's a pretty good way to enforce a proper completion of the chores.
Ron, your book is called The Opposite of Spoiled. Does having a lot of money necessarily spoil a kid?
No, money's just a small part of it. I think spoiled kids don't have any rules or guidelines, or at least they don't have very many. And if they break whatever rules and guidelines or fall outside of them that do exist, there aren't really any consequences. Spoiled kids are also, you know, parents kind of lavish them with time and attention, not the normal amount of time and attention, but the kind of time and attention that we've come to know as helicopter parenting. Mm-hmm. And so it's that confluence of things that can lead to spoiling. And yes, if they have a lot of stuff or if they get to do a lot of really special things and they don't express the right amount of gratitude and they take it for granted, that's a part of it too. But, you know, wealthy families don't have a monopoly on spoiling children. Far from it.
Well, Ron Lieber is the personal finance columnist for the New York Times and author of the new book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. You can find a link at Radio Boston to an excerpt from that book. Ron Lieber, thanks so much for coming in and talking about this. We really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure and a privilege.
And I should say, Ron joined us from Chicago, not New York, as I said earlier in the show. And John Spooner, investment advisor, author of many books, including No One Ever Told Us That, Money and Life Letters to My Grandchildren. John Spooner, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
Listeners, stay with us. There's a lot more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.